Hello, and a very warm welcome to episode 5 of our PolicyCorner.org podcast series. It is great to have you back. Today is Thursday, the 23rd of November. My name is Felix Hoffmann, and I am producing and moderating this podcast, and today we will discuss China's rise on the global stage and what the International Monetary Fund, or IMF, has to do with it all.
China has certainly increased its economic influence in the region, but also globally. But I think in a military and security policy perspective, the US will not give up its hegemonic position, and it will steer to conflict, which is also potentially dangerous. But I'm pretty convinced that it's not coming to a peaceful solution in the future.
You are listening to our monthly podcast series, where we discuss articles published on our website, policycorner.org, with their authors, and also take a look at current international issues. On our website, we publish short but sharp policy pieces that deal with everything from climate change to peace and conflict, economic issues, and much more. If you want to learn more about the project, contribute, or become part of our team, please feel free to check out our website at policycorner.org and get in touch. My guest today is Riccardo Ramacci. He studies international security and has completed a bachelor's degree in international affairs at San Gallen University with a focus on economics. Before his graduate studies, he worked as an academic intern at the Consulate General of the Permanent Mission of Switzerland to the United Nations in New York. For PolicyCorner.org, he has written a piece entitled China and the International Monetary Fund: Convergence or Conflict, which we will discuss today. Welcome, Riccardo. It's good to have you.
Thanks for having me.
In your article, you argue that the decision structures of the International Monetary Fund, or IMF, the most powerful international financial institution worldwide, are dominated by Western states. This creates a tension with reality in which there are many strong non-Western economies, in particular China. Could you give us an idea of what it is that the International Monetary Fund actually does?
Well, the general purpose of the IMF, stated in the guidelines, is to ensure the stability of the international financial system, which is a very broad definition, but it mainly has three tools to do so. The first one is surveillance, so it actually monitors the different economies of its member states, and the international monetary system in general, to recognize crises early on and to take necessary measures for it. The technical assistance is the second tool for the IMF, which is just to give expertise to different and technical assistance to the different member states if they need that to ensure the economic stability or to ensure a transition of any kind. The third tool, and also the most controversial tool of the IMF, is the lending, which occurs often through sovereign debt crisis. You may have heard it several times in the news, for example, with Greece in the European Union. This lending may come with certain conditions, which is called the conditionality of lending, which is also controversial, of course, because it always depends on what conditions you have to fulfill in order to get some money from the IMF. So yeah, that's very broadly speaking what the IMF does, broadly.
Cool. So as I mentioned before, some countries are not happy with how the decision structures of the International Monetary Fund work. So why is it that developing countries and emerging states such as China are unhappy with the current state of affairs?
The decision structure or the decision-making process in the IMF evolves around so-called quotas, which is a certain number which each member state has and which reflects its voting power within the IMF. So it's not democratically that each state has one vote, but that every state has a certain amount of voting shares, which should be adapted to the relative or the respective economic power, the stability, the openness of a member state. Now, the problem is, since the IMF is an institution which was founded in the within the context of Bretton Woods after World War II in 1945, a lot of Western European countries and also the US are heavily overrepresented because the IMF has failed to adapt its quotas to the growing economies of the third world, but also mainly of the BRIC economies. So Brazil, Russia, India, but particularly China, which is probably the fastest growing or was the fastest growing economy in recent decades, but still hasn't received the quotas accordingly. So that's why China is very unhappy about the current situation, because it feels like the quota is not representing its economic power and influence in the world.
All right. So in conclusion, it seems like China's influence in the IMF and its actual influence in the world economy are mismatched. So what does that mean concretely?
As I said, that means that China has a share of the world economy which is far above its actual voting power within the IMF. So concretely, that means that the legitimacy of the IMF is out of balance because it does not reflect its actual guidelines, in which it clearly states that each country should receive the voting share according to its economic power and openness. And yeah, that's the current conflict between the IMF and China.
Okay, interesting. So what impact could this imbalance have both for the International Monetary Fund and sort of the global economic system?
Well, if the IMF fails to further adapt to the quota, I have to say here, or I have to mention, that there have been several reforms put in place in recent years, but they still do not fully reflect the actual relation between the quota and the economic power of China, for instance. So what could happen is that the IMF simply suffers a lot of global legitimacy, but also that it falls short of an efficient solving of financial crisis and solving, because it does not include the most important economies in an adequate way. So another thing that already happened is that China seeks to create alternate international financial institutions such as the AIIB, the Asian Infrastructure and Investment Bank, which also has, I think, somewhere between the 50s and 60s of member states, which is a competing financial institution. So it could possibly create a verge between the IMF and new founded competing IFIs.
Okay, interesting. So China has been very active in recent years in terms of stepping up its involvement in the region, consolidating its power both internally and externally, standing its ground in territorial disputes with the United States, particularly in the South China Sea. And most notably, there's the One Belt, One Road project. Can you tell us more about this project?
Well, I'm no expert about the project, but of course I followed the news, and the amount of money which is pumped into this project by China, I think it's somewhere around $124 billion,
wow,
which is an enormous sum, reflects the future role which China wants to play, at least economically, in the region, and which is very much in line with its behavior within the IMF. China has increased its influence in all three important indicators of influence within the International Monetary Fund, which is that it has more personnel which is working within the IMF, so it's more represented in it within the IMF itself, but it also gives more money, and as I said before, it also pressures for more quota. So I think that project is also very much in line with the behavior of the Chinese regime.
Interesting. And what do you think does all of this tell us about China's ambitions and policy goals on the global stage?
Well, I think it is clear at this point, I mean, that China plays a bigger economic role than it did 40 or 50 years ago. As for the intentions of the government itself, it's really difficult because it's still in a very opaque nature. It's an intransparent decision-making process. It's a one-party ruling system. So we can only speculate from this point. And I'm also no expert in China's policymaking and its global intentions. But I would say that you definitely see a clear goal to gain economic influence within the existing financial institutions, but also outside if necessary and if it's refused the access to said financial institutions.
In your article, you argue that the IMF should reflect the economic importance of China in order to ensure the stability of the international economic system. To what extent can further integration of increasingly economically powerful states such as China into institutions such as the IMF stabilize the economic system?
Well, as I briefly mentioned above, it is crucial for the IMF's functioning to fully reflect and accurately reflect all the economies, because the IMF is built to ensure the stability of the financial system, but also to solve crises in an efficient manner. And if it does not include big economies in its decision-making process, it also cannot solve them efficiently, because it does not, because it possibly neglects the specific regional needs of a huge chunk of the world, or like of the world economy especially. So it is absolutely crucial to for the IMF to adapt to these quotas. And besides that, I already mentioned the legitimacy, which is also an important normative factor, I think.
Okay, interesting. So there seems to be a need for restructuring the decision-making process inside the IMF, but wouldn't a reshuffle of the power structure inside the International Monetary Fund create instability, at least in the short term?
Well, I think that the nations, the Western European nations, but also the US, are naturally reluctant to give up power within the IMF. That is understandable from a nation's perspective, but from a global perspective, it is in the long term, it makes a lot more sense to give the power to the countries according to their economies. Because if you fail to do so, what's the alternative? China, like we've seen in the past, has already sought to create alternative institutions, and that it will continue to do so, and other countries will follow its example if the IMF continues to give overrepresentative power to Western European states and the US. And so it's clear that in the long term there's only one solution, even if that might cause a disarray in the less short term.
So considering issues of global inequality, of global dependencies, some might argue that stabilizing the current global economic system is the exact opposite of what we should do. Shouldn't we seek to empower those actors that are disenfranchised and sidelined in decision-making processes of international economic policy?
Well, that is certainly a valid point. And of course, the IMF, by its nature, is not an egalitarian institution at all. I mean, it is the exact opposite of it, because it represents the economies and not the voting powers. But I would argue that that is also important, because the IMF's purpose is not to ensure global equality, but to ensure financial stability, which are two, not necessarily, but often different things. So for the IMF, I think it is more important to solve economic crises in an efficient manner rather than promote equality. But I think still there's a valid point. I would just argue that the IMF is not the right institution to realize that endeavor.
All right. So far we talked a lot about China's growing role in world affairs. And one way of looking at all of this is that recent developments hint at a far more confrontational and self-confident course of action in Beijing. At the same time, the United States seem to be far less eager, and under their current leadership, also less able to project power, which is creating an opening for these Chinese ambitions that we talked about. What do you make of this perspective?
Well, I'm not that sure that the US actually eager to give up its influential role in the region in a military's perspective or in a security policy perspective. I mean, if you look at the South Chinese Sea, if you look at Japan and South Korea, its allies, and if you look at what the current leadership in the US, at least its generals and its military staff, has done, its classic Republican foreign policy. And I don't think that the US is likely is likely to give up that role in the future of a dominant world power, which has a heavy military influence. Economically, you might be right. We've certainly seen a struggling US with huge debt, and it's also in debt towards China. And China has certainly increased its economic influence in the region, but also globally, as we also stated above. One Belt, One Road is only one example. So economically, you might be right, but I think in a military and security policy perspective, the US will not give up its hegemonic position, and it will steer to conflict, which is also potentially dangerous. But I'm pretty convinced that it's not coming to a peaceful solution in the future.
Oh, wow. So how do you think should Germany or should the European Union react to this heightened tension? Should we engage China in trade? Should we confront its ambitions? Or should we simply hope for better times and lay back?
Well, that's... I think we shouldn't do the latter, certainly, but I think it's a difficult and open question. I'm pretty sure that the Western European states... in regard to the IMF, should give up their over-representative voting rights and their quotas, because otherwise it's just a hypocritical behavior. That is no question. And it also has to accept that its economic importance is going to decline further in the future. What it can do in regard to China and also the US and Russia and the power politics is to act as a mediator, as a negotiator, to serve as a platform which promotes peace. And I think that's this idea of international peace promotion is one of the most powerful ideas or capacities which Europe still has to offer. And I think we should focus on that. And of course, we should also not fall back to criticize China for its human rights violations. That's not a question. But we should also be consequent in our actions and also admit that if the IMF is set up by certain rules, we should also follow these rules.
Certainly. All right, Ricardo, thanks so much for your fascinating insights. I hope you enjoyed this episode of our PolicyCorner.org podcast series. Please share this project with your friends and subscribe to our podcast. You can do that on iTunes. My guest today was Ricardo Ramacci. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you, too.
Thanks also to Nicolas Guez, who helped with recording this episode. And please also check our website at PolicyCorner.org, where you can find all the information on how to get involved. Thank you so much for listening. My name is Felix Hoffmann, and that's it for today. More exciting stuff to come, so be back next month for our PolicyCorner.org podcast series. Goodbye.